p.m. to midnight at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
Today on Flashpoints, we present Giants of Journalism, a newly discovered rare 1997 recording of reporters Gary Webb, Robert Perry, and Pete Bruton talking about the dangers and the pitfalls of reporting on covert actions by U.S. intelligence agencies engaged in an attempt to overthrow the Sandinista government. The reporters were interviewed by Flashpoint's executive producer, Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, California, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. In 1997, I had the rare opportunity to sit with three seasoned reporters who had broken major stories that showed the U.S. government and U.S. intelligence agencies working with drug traffickers to overthrow the Nicaraguan government. Robert Perry broke the first stories of the heavy involvement of drug traffickers in helping to illegally support the Contras. Gary Webb showed how the pro-Contra traffickers were selling their top stuff in central L.A. and sending parts of the profits from the cocaine to the Contras. And Pete Bruton broke the story of how the CIA was using failing SNLs to illegally fund the Contras. Listen to this.
Good evening and welcome to Giants of Journalism. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I am a producer for the Pacifica Radio Network, KPFA, and an associate editor with the Pacific News Service. Tonight on this special program, we have three guests who have really taken on the establishment, reported the difficult story, and suffered for doing it. We're going to hear about those stories, what the confrontation was about, and what got them in trouble. And I want to welcome our guests here, Robert Perry, Gary Webb, and Pete Bruton. They've all, in some way or another, really had confrontations with what I would call the national security state. Robert Perry is the author of several books and now the editor of IF Magazine and the Consortium Internet News. Gary Webb is the author of Dark Alliance, the CIA, the Contras, and the Crack Connection. And Pete Bruton is the author of The Mafia, the CIA, and George Bush. I wonder why that got him in trouble. And I want to thank you for joining us this evening. And let's go around the horn here and find out exactly what the story was that got you in trouble. Bob Perry.
Well, in 1981, Dennis, I was with the Associated Press and put on their special assignment team. And the story that I started working on was the story of the CIA's involvement in Central America, which was a hot issue at the time. The Reagan administration cared a great deal about what was happening in Central America. They were involved in El Salvador, where a right-wing government was in power, in Nicaragua, where they were challenging a left-wing government in power. They were working behind the scenes in Honduras and Guatemala. So there was a great deal of drama to the story. There were massacres occurring against civilian populations. There were CIA secret armies being formed. And that was the story that I began to look at in that period of the early 1980s, leading eventually to coverage of Oliver North's secret operations, the first stories about Contra drug trafficking, and other aspects of that rather curious and often very violent episode in our history.
Now, I believe you're the first journalist who named Oliver North in public, you and Brian Barger. There was this source in the White House, and nobody was talking about who he was or what he was really doing.
Well, we had a number of sources by the time we were getting to the point of mid-1985, and I did a story in June of 85 about Oliver North. At that time, I had known North. The question was whether he was secretly running the war or not in Nicaragua, because the Congress had forbidden the administration from continuing to support the Contras. And what we were beginning to hear first from Contras and then later from people inside the government was that North had taken over that responsibility. It was a very sensitive story, one that the White House denied rather vigorously and continued to deny really for about a year and a half.
What was the date? What was the first story that mentioned the Contra drug connection?
Well, Brian Barger and I did a piece in December of 1985, which was based on reporting we had done in Miami and in Central America. And that story looked at how a number of the Contra units, really across the board, there were different groups, as you remember, certain small armies and factions, but effectively every major faction of the Contra army had gotten involved in drug trafficking. Our focus was at that time in Costa Rica, where there were several units, including the FDN, which had begun an operation in Costa Rica. There were also Cuban Americans who had gone in to Costa Rica, supposedly to help the anti-communist cause, but who were essentially moonlighting as drug traffickers. And we had that picture. We had it from DEA officials from the field. We had it from people back in Washington. We had it from the Contras themselves. And that's when the AP ran the first story about that in December of 1985.
December of 1985. Gary Webb, you sort of picked up the story many years later. You were a reporter with the San Jose Mercury News. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how you came to this story that now we know as the Dark Alliance.
Well, actually, one of the first calls I made was to Bob to find out what had happened to the story, because I had gotten a tip that the Contras were dealing drugs in Los Angeles. And this is 95, so it's almost 10 years later. And I had followed Iran Contra fairly closely, and I had remembered whispers or rumors or something about Contra drug trafficking, but I never remembered how I heard it or where I heard it or what became of it. And when I started going down this trail again in 95, I ran across a fellow who worked on the Senate investigation who mentioned the work that Bob and Brian had done back a decade before, and called him up and asked him if he had ever heard anything about the Contras dealing drugs on the West Coast, in Los Angeles specifically. And Bob said that they had heard some things about stuff going on the West Coast, but most of their work had been done, as he said, in Costa Rica, and that they really didn't track it once the drugs got into the United States. They were sort of looking at the transshipment points down there involving the Contras and the planes and the airfields and stuff. And so, but it was good to hear that I was, you know, there was a journalist of some repute who has said that this is, this was going on, and the story has truth to it. And it was very encouraging to me to hear that, and that's when I told my editors, I said, this is a good story, and we're going to go after it. And ultimately, it led to a series about sort of how the crack market in South Central Los Angeles got started back in the early 1980s, and the interconnection between a crack dealer named Freeway Ricky Ross and a couple of Nicaraguan Contra supporters who were selling cocaine in Los Angeles and San Francisco, and their connections to the CIA, and where some of this money that they were making from selling drugs was going, which was to buy weapons and supplies. And that was essentially the story, and it was interconnected into showing how something that the Central Intelligence Agency was doing in Central America, which was the story Bob was covering, how it was impacting on us here at home through this drug trafficking that was coming back from the Contras, and what happened to this cocaine once it got to the United States.
And what was the initial reaction when you first broke the story?
Well, the initial reaction, and we did a three-part series, and it broke in August of 96, right in the week between the Republican and the Democratic National Convention, when like every reporter in the country is on vacation. And so it came out, nobody saw it, but we had a website.
I can tell you a few of us saw it.
Yeah, well, you were one of the first ones to call me.
And almost fell off our chairs.
You,
here we
you
go
were
again.
The first one to call. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Better warn this guy.
Well, Bob did warn me. Bob, to his credit, did warn me off the story, and I thought he was like a nervous Nelly or something.
And we're going to hear more about what happened, but so the initial response was?
First of all, silence. Yeah. And then it was picked up on the Internet, and it got picked up on talk radio. And once it got the Internet and talk radio started going, then people started finding out about it, and they started calling up the website and reading the story for themselves. And we were, at one point, we got like 1.3 million hits in one day on that website. So the story got out that way. And then the mainstream press had to sort of acknowledge that something was going on.
And in a way, that was sort of revolutionary, because it became the web became the equalizer. You know, as many people who get the New York Times could see this right here.
Probably more.
Yeah.
Because we were getting email from Denmark, and college students in Sweden were emailing us saying they'd read it from there. So it was really the first major investigative piece sort of to break on the internet, which is where it broke.
Wow. Now, Pete Bruton, your story broke in a mainstream paper. You were... Well, talk a little bit. Give us a thumbnail sketch of what led to the mafia, the CIA, and George Bush. Give us just a taste of that.
Well, once upon a time, I was a grunt newspaper reporter in Houston, covered courts and county government, city hall for the Chronicle, and I did investigative stories for the Houston Post, medicine, hospitals, nonprofit foundations, local government. A business reporter at the Post got a tip about a failed savings and loan and some kind of questionable connections, and they asked me to help him, and we ran into the mafia involved in a little savings and loan in Houston, mafia from New York. So we did this story for about a year and a half, and it was widely praised and got a lot of attention, won awards, and then I wrote a story that had three little letters in it, CIA, and things changed dramatically.
What changed?
There was either silence or fellow reporters downplaying it or criticizing it. And this was something that was new to me. I couldn't understand why another reporter would criticize this story. And other organizations came out of the woodwork. It's like there's this fifth column of support for the CIA in this country. And anytime something critical comes out, it's like the red flags go over everywhere, and people come out of the woodwork and start criticizing it and getting stories, writing op-ed pieces. It's a whole mechanism that just comes out, and you're the brunt of it. And the Post, to its credit, ran some of these stories. They did not run others that were more important ones. Our law firm, the Post law firm at that time, had killed these stories, and that prompted me to quit the Post and write this book.
And
that was
also
just the beginning of my problems.
It apparently prompted you to become a lawyer to know how to hold them accountable.
Well, I decided to go to law school. I just got fed up with lawyers telling me what I could and couldn't print.
Right.
And I ended up having to support myself to play a lawyer.
You're listening to Giants of Journalism. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I'm hosting a very interesting hour with significant investigative reporters who took the risk, who went after the hard story and felt the heat of what it means to take on the power structure, the political power structure, and what I also consider the national security state. And what I'd like to do is go a little bit deeper into the reactions of all of your stories, because I believe that really you in your reporting, essentially, you were brought smack up against really the powers that be, the powers that really control the flow of information and decide what's going to get out there to the public and what's going to stay inside based on so-called reasons of national security. Bob, talk about what was happening behind the scenes. I mean, your story, one of your earlier stories about this stuff was released by mistake, by accident.
Right. Well, the original story on Contra Drugs was that case. Barger and I came back from Costa Rica, and we at that point had multiple corroboration of this problem. There were documents. There was even an indictment of one of the Contra leaders. But we came back. Brian thought we were in good shape. Brian was sort of new to the AP. I'd been there a lot longer. And I explained that, no, I think the struggle's just begun here. So we got back to Washington, and the initial reaction from the bureau chief was fairly positive. He was well reported, was well presented, and he thought there might not be that much difficulty. But it went to New York, to the top level of the AP, and came back with a lot of concerns. We went back and did more reporting. I went back to a source at the White House, who I still can't name, although he's pretty well known now. And he actually took information from a CIA report where the agency itself had confirmed some elements of the Contra drug problem, although he tried to steer me away from some others. But so we went back again with this more detailed information. The DEA said that they were aware of a lot of drug trafficking in northern Costa Rica, although they wouldn't say officially who was behind it, but it was quite clear that the Contras were. So we ended up with that story, but it still wasn't enough. And finally, I sent in the story to the attention of the bureau chief. And while he was busy being killed by the upper echelon in New York, the story also appeared on the AP's foreign language computer. And so it was just routinely translated from English to Spanish and moved out on the Spanish language wire by editors who didn't know there was a problem.
And that's how the story broke.
And then a couple days later, Brian Barger got a call from someone who'd read our story and called to congratulate him. And Barger was just ashen. He came over to me and said, somehow the story's gotten out. And we traced back and found out what had happened. And then the AP very quickly put it back into English and moved it for the national wires. But that is how the first story got out about Contra drugs.
No, you say they put it back into English. Did they put it into English that people would understand the implications of the story?
Yes, yes. Although there were some things that were left out that I would have liked to have had left in. But we went out, and then the next day, the State Department, at their regular briefing, announced that there was no evidence to support this story. A claim that we now know, based on the material that came out after Gary Webb's piece, that the agency has now released, showing that there was a multitude of evidence supporting this, much more than we ever dreamt of or knew.
Now, at what point did you know that this is going to be trouble for you, that you have gone too far, that this is a story that people do not want to hear about?
Well, we were hearing all the way through this time period of the mid-80s, the attacks on us. It was sometimes direct, sometimes subtle. The main story we were working on was the North Network story, which was also being denied. The White House was claiming there was no North Network. We had made this up. The Congress had done a brief investigation in the summer of 86 by the